Blog Talk Radio.
From Dallas, Texas, I'm Chad Burleson, and this is The Chad Report. It is Monday, January 11th, 2016, and here to join me, as always, my partner and co-host, Jeff Rivers.
Hey, how you doing, Chad?
Doing okay. It's been a bizarre Monday, to say the least, and it just, first off, I want to say usually it fades into where I say this is live from Dallas. Today was like, chop!
I know. The system's not working.
I'm like, right. Oh, hello. So great. I know. It happens.
Yeah, no, it's not fading for some reason.
Last night I was, of course, the 73rd annual Golden Globe Awards was last night that we watched. And entertaining, definitely for some good reasons and some bad. But after that was over, maybe a couple hours, I was kind of looking over some notes I'd made for tonight's show, and out of nowhere comes the news that David Bowie had died, the legendary rock star. And the first place where it popped up was not a source I would deem necessarily reliable. You know what I mean? That I would, bet the farm on. But right. It took no time at all before sources that I would start popping up with this story. And I was just floored. Because if you remember, just on Friday, his birthday was on Friday. During the celebrity birthday segment, you actually guessed his birthday. And I said, yes, and he's on the verge of a comeback because he had just released his new album. Blackstar was the name of it. And it was very critically acclaimed and everything. And so to hear this two nights later, I was floored, And there's a lot of times when celebrities will die and you're not that shocked, if they're older, they've been sick a long time, But then this reminded me of Donna Summer. If you remember when Donna Summer died of lung cancer, no one had a clue she was sick. And the same thing with David Bowie, who died of cancer as well. Let me just start. Like I said, David Bowie has died at the age of 69. His son, Duncan Jones, tweeted, quote, "Very sorry and sad to say it's true." Jones, who's 44, wrote on Twitter late Sunday night, "I'll be offline for a while. Love to all." A statement on the musician's official website read, "David Bowie died peacefully today, surrounded by his family after a courageous 18-month battle with cancer. While many of you will share in his loss, we ask that you respect the family's privacy during their time of grief." His representative, Steve Martin, said that Bowie died peacefully and was surrounded by family, according to the Associated Press. No more details were provided. The AP, the Daily Mail, and other British media reported that Bowie died following a secret battle with cancer, although the type was not specified. His latest music video, Lazarus, was released Thursday and seemed to provide a haunting image of what was to come. Bowie in a hospital bed, his eyes bandaged, the lyrics being with the line, "Look up here, I'm in heaven." And I've seen clips of this video, and it is haunting. He has, bandages and these things over the bandages where the eyes would go. And it's very haunting, to be honest with you, because obviously he'd been fighting this, for 18 months. And Blackstar was the 25th album from the glam rock icon, who was born David Jones, actually, in South London on January 1947. He took up saxophone when he was 12 years old and played with a slew of bands after high school, eventually changing his name to Bowie in order to avoid confusion with the Monkees lead singer Davy Jones. He released his self-titled debut album in 1967, but didn't break out until years later with Space Oddity, which is best remembered for introducing fictional astronaut character Major Tom. It was one of nearly two dozen songs that Bowie charted on Billboard's Hot 100 in his five-decade career. including number one hits Let's Dance and the John Lennon, who co-wrote Fame, his song Fame was his other number one hit, and John Lennon co-wrote and sang on that song, actually. So on tour and through his music, Bowie slipped in and out of various personas and alter egos, most famously the androgynous Ziggy Stardust, eccentric Aladdin Sane, and drug-fueled the Thin White Duke, created during his mid-70s Young Americans era. And that is what he's going to be most remembered for, is that era. Although, again, this is kind of where the baby boomers generation and Generation Xers, when I think of an artist, they're going to think of a different image. Our generation, when we think of David Bowie, I think, Jeff, being Generation Xers like you and I are, the first thing that pops into our head is a David Bowie with the blazer and the nice shirt from the early 80s from the Let's Dance, right. You know, China Girl, Modern Love,
exactly.
That David Bowie's the first, you know what I mean? And
exactly.
Whereas the baby boomers who are older than us, the first thing they think of is the makeup, the androgynous look of that glam rock era of the 1970s.
Exactly. I agree.
I mean, is that the first image that comes to mind for you? It's when you think of David Bowie, is the blonde-haired, you know, guy from the earth? Because he changed his, again, this was a man, before there was Madonna, Marilyn Manson, or Lady Gaga, David Bowie paved the way for all of
right.
constantly changing their look. And, but, you know, the first thing I think of when I think of David Bowie is that early 80s look for me, because that's when,
yeah, me,
you know,
me too. I do too, definitely. That's the first thing that comes to mind.
But I also, of course, the other looks as well, because I've seen them so much, and you know, as a small
right.
child, remember his, you know, Fame and Golden Years and all that changes. Just a very iconic star. And I have to chop this one up to Jeff, and there's been several, I could say it like this. This is someone that I knew I liked, but I didn't realize how much until they died. You know what I mean? As I was
right.
going over this last night and looking through all of his work and listening to things and reading things, it just hit me that I've always liked David Bowie a lot more than I thought I did. You know?
Right, right. Well, it's, you know, when you told me about how the music is and how it's kind of, you know, eerie a little bit on some of his writing of his songs and stuff. It's going to be interesting to hear those now that I know that he, you know, that he's gone and that he had cancer when he was making these songs.
Writing those songs.
So it's going
absolutely.
To be, writing those songs, yes. And so it's going to be that much more interesting to listen to them. And I'm sure they're very good.
Exactly. I agree. And really, a lot of his songs were prophetic, and we'll get a little bit more into that later. I did want to say that several stars took to Twitter to express their condolences. Mick Jagger, who was very close to David Bowie, said, "David was always an inspiration to me and a true original. He was wonderfully shameless in his work." If you remember, they had a top 10 hit. They did Dancing in the Streets. This was like in 1987, I believe. And it was a duet, and they were always very linked together. He went on to say, "We had so many good times." This is a separate tweet. "We had so many good times together. He was my friend. I will never forget him." Madonna said, "I'm devastated. This great artist changed my life. The first concert I ever saw in Detroit. Rest in peace." Kanye West said, "David Bowie was one of my most important inspirations. So fearless, so creative. He gave us magic for a lifetime." And he also tweeted later that he prays for his friends and family. Billy Idol said, "Nearly brought to tears by the sudden news of David Bowie. David Bowie's passing, it was just very sad. Rest in peace." Pharrell Williams said, "David Bowie was a true innovator, a true creative. May he rest in peace." And it just goes on and on. So many, you know, big stars.
Yeah, wow.
Even Ricky Gervais, fresh off hosting the Golden Globe Awards, tweeted, "I just lost a hero. Rest in peace, David Bowie." So that just kind of shows you, you know, how, you know, far-reaching his appeal was to so many around the world. And
right.
Including Prime Minister David Cameron of Great Britain said, "I grew up listening to and watching the pop genius David Bowie. He was a master of reinvention and who kept getting it right. A huge loss." So once again, it's and this is the fourth star, you know, and the biggest definitely so far of the new year. It started out with Wayne Rogers of Mesh, and then of course R&B great Natalie Cole passed away. And then last week we had, and these are all pop culture people, especially known here in the United States, Pat Harrington, who was famous for Schneider on One Day at a Time, The Handyman, who kind of stole every scene he was in that show, and now the legendary rock star David Bowie, dead at age 69.
Yeah.
That's tough, you know?
Yeah, it sure
tough.
Is.
All right, like I said, we've got more to get to. We will jump right into the highs and lows of the Golden Globes and more news when we come back. But first, on this day in 1972, The Night Stalker, starring Darren McGavin, was broadcast as the ABC Movie of the Week. It was watched by 75 million viewers, becoming the highest made-for-TV movie to that date, the highest rated. In theaters, wow. Dirty Harry, an American action thriller film starring Clint Eastwood and Andy Robinson, was in its third straight week at the top of the box office, and the release of a brand new single that Rolling Stone magazine would later call one of the greatest songs of all time was this.
My time was running wild, a million dead-end streets, and every time I thought I got it made, it seemed the taste was not so sweet. So I turned myself to face me, but I've never caught a glimpse of how the others must see the faker. I'm much too fast to take that test. Change
it. Turn and face the strain.
Change it. Don't wanna be a richer man.
Change it.
Turn and face the strain.
Change it.
It's gonna have to be a different man. But never leave the stream of warm and permanent sand. So the days float through my eyes, but still the days seem the same. And these children that you spit on as they try to change their worlds are immune to your consultations. They're quite aware of what they're going through.
Change it.
Turn and face the strain.
Change it.
Don't tell them to blow up on out of it.
Released 44 years ago this week, David Bowie and Changes. And this song, Jeff, this is like so many songs that we talk about that are either not released as a single or that are released and do not crack the top 40. And that is, believe it or not, Changes was released as a single, and it was a hit twice, but it got to number 41. So in the Billboard's
really?
Top 40 history books, it doesn't exist, basically, if you can believe that.
Wow.
As popular as that song is.
Wow.
It's arguable that that's his signature song. It's so, it's been so widely used in commercials and so many other things that it just,
yeah,
everyone knows.
I would
this.
Have thought at least top 20, you know.
You know, and again, one that comes to mind instantly is that was not released as a single. There have been so many big songs that were either released and did not do well at the time but would do well later, or, you know, they pick up, for some reason they catch on. But Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven, arguably the best rock and roll song of all time, was not released as a single. So if you look at Billboard's singles history, it's like that song never existed. So you can't always go by the charts, you know. I don't like it when the reason they did that back in the day was they wanted you to, and they don't do it so much anymore, but they wanted you to buy the whole album as opposed to just buying
right.
a single. And I thought, we won't release this, you know. Sometimes it worked, most of the time it didn't, and that's why you see that they don't do that as much anymore, or hardly ever,
right.
actually. And because how many times have you bought an album? You went ahead and bought the whole album because of one hit, and the rest of the album was terrible. You only like that one song on it, you know. The song Changes, though, it's very it represents him actually as a whole. It's it talks about artistic reinvention with the line "Strange fascination, fascinating me. Changes are taking the pace I'm going through," and you know, that I just find that very prophetic, you know, for his career. And how that actually, this is according to David Bowie himself. He said, quote, "This turned into a monster that nobody would stop asking for at concerts. David, do Changes," he said. "I had no idea it would become such a popular thing." And Jeff, that song is ranked at number 127 on Rolling Stone magazine's list of the 500 greatest songs of all time. So, again, that just goes to show. And let me tell you, you know what the number one song was on that day in 1972? A song that you will never hear on the Chad Report. I can tell the listeners that right now. It was Brand New Key by Melanie, which is, if I sat down right now and wrote probably the 25 most hated songs I could come up with, that would be on the list. She whines through the whole thing. "I've got a brand new pair of roller skates. You've got a brand new key."
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
I hate that song. I don't dislike it. I hate it. Okay.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's horrible. The lyrics
yeah.
are so stupid.
That's
and
creepy.
Isn't it so whiny? I just, you know, I. And I would love to say it's one of those fluke type songs that, okay, it was catchy for 1 week and that's why it made number one. That's not the case here. It was number one for 3 straight weeks. 3 weeks.
Wow.
And it's just miserable. 1972 was an odd, some great gems came from that. Let's Stay Together by Al Green, Without You by Nilsson. So many huge, great songs. But then you had things like The Candyman by Sammy Davis Jr., number one for 3 weeks. Really? I love Sammy Davis Jr., but who can make the sun rise? That's such a cheesy song. I can't believe. I just don't understand what people were thinking sometimes, you know? I know I'll catch heat for this. Song Sung Blue by Neil Diamond. Seriously? And I like a lot of Neil Diamond songs. Not that one. That one's so cheesy and so stupid. Song Sung Blue, you know?
yeah.
And then you have a song like this, Changes by David Bowie, and it doesn't even crack the top 40. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it is.
You just never know.
yeah.
Not to go off or rant, nothing against those. Another one, though, from 72 that is unbelievable. Number one for 3 weeks, Baby Don't Get Hooked on Me by Mac Davis. Seriously? Okay. I'll stop my little rant there. I'll take Changes any day. None of those songs, by the way, made Rolling Stone's list of greatest of all time. David Bowie's Changes did. Okay.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, good point.
All right, the Golden Globe 73rd Golden Globe Awards were last night. Two frontier survival tales, The Revenant and The Martian, led a bleep-filled Golden Globes, where the star power of Leonardo DiCaprio, Matt Damon, and Jennifer Lawrence was challenged only by the relentless mocking of the show's beer-wielding host, Ricky Gervais. In an upset, Alejandro Iñárritu, it's got that little thing there at the end. His bloody 1820s thriller, The Revenant, won Best Drama Sunday, little thingy, how's that? As well as Best Director and Best Actor for Leonardo DiCaprio. Though he had a similar run at the Academy Awards last year with the Best Picture-winning Birdman, he won only a share of the Best Screenplay at last year's Globes. He said that pain is temporary, but a film is forever. Wow. Two of this award season's top critical picks, the Journalism Procedural Spotlight and Todd Haynes' lesbian romance Carol, went home empty-handed. Instead, it was The Revenant, made with the same seamless cinematography of The Birdman, that emerged triumphant on the same weekend it nearly toppled the box office juggernaut Star Wars The Force Awakens with a $38 million opening. And Jeff and I just watched The Revenant a couple of days ago, and it was very deserving. Well, I have to say, Jeff, Leonardo DiCaprio, very deserving of its win.
Oh, deserving. Yeah, I agree. It was an excellent movie.
It really, really was. And the directing, the director, very deserving. Unbelievable. I mean, it was – look out at the Oscars is all I can say. This is going to be – you know, I would have to think this is a favorite right now going into – you know. DiCaprio, who could be headed for his first Oscar, which is stunning to me because I thought he had won an Oscar before, Jeff, and he has this. Leonardo DiCaprio has never won an Oscar. He dedicated his Golden Globe Award to the First Nations people represented in this film and all the indigenous peoples around the world. It is time that we recognize your history and that we protect your indigenous lands from corporate interests and people out there to exploit them, he said. And that is as they were blaring the music to get him off stage, which I found
right.
There were times I thought it was so rude. He just won Best Actor, one of the in a dramatic motion picture. They gave more time to some of the smaller, and nothing against those, anybody that took home a Golden Globe. That's incredible, of course. But as soon as he got up there, he was like, he said 20 something seconds, seriously, if you remember. And I thought, how rude. And I just. Because how many times do these award shows go over, Jeff? Really? Are we really on that? I mean,
cut out some of the hoopla that some of these presenters go through. That's not very funny. You know, some of the scripted stuff
and you're just going, was that supposed to be that funny?
Don't try to, you know, make your stuff original on how you present it. Just present it. You know, that's what you're there for. You know, I don't want to have any hoopla with it.
I mean, if it's cool, but, I don't have a problem with it, Jeff, if it's done right. But sometimes it's a thud. It's like that did not go over that well, you know. I could have done without Jennifer Lawrence and Amy Schumer's whole little thing at the beginning, if you remember how they walked out. And and I love Jennifer Lawrence, but questionably nominated in the comedy categories, a theoretically easier route to statuettes, Ridley Scott's stranded astronaut tale The Martian took Best Comedy and Best Actor in a Comedy for Matt Damon. Stepping to the stage, Scott wondered, comedy? And answered with a skeptical wave of his hand. Damon had to suffer being introduced by Gervais as, quote, the only person who Ben Affleck hasn't been unfaithful to. The actor later said the nearly $600 million success of The Martian, quote, was an unlikely pleasure. I've made a lot of movies that people just did not go see. And what had to be the highlight of the night, Jeff, I think you'll agree, Sylvester Stallone scored a knockout 39 years after the first Rocky, nominated for the same character that earned him his only other Golden Globe nomination. He took Best Supporting Actor for the Rocky sequel reboot Creed. The crowd greeted him with a standing ovation. Quote, I want to thank my imaginary friend Rocky Balboa for being the best friend I ever had, Stallone said. And I got chills when they announced his name, Jeff, because immediately they went into the theme from Rocky by Bill Conti's awesome theme.
Yeah.
And I mean,
awesome.
The crowd just rose to their feet and stayed on their feet for a long time, right, applauding him as he walked to collect this award. Because Sylvester Stallone's one of the biggest. He's one of the biggest stars in Hollywood. I mean, we're talking how many? I don't have it in front of me, but he has how many? No telling how many movies to his credit. He's been in so many huge movies, and I think he's a great. You know, some people say, "Oh, he's one dimensional," and that you can say that about a lot of actors. Well, he knows how to. He plays that one dimension very well. Then would be my answer to that.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
And remember, keep in mind, this man wrote the movie Rocky. No one knew who he was. And he shopped that around and got the money. And he wanted to star in it because they were going to buy that, but they wanted some other big actor to play him in 1976. And Sylvester Stallone said, "No, I wrote this, and I really would like to play it." And he managed to come up with the money. People mortgaged houses and all kinds of things. And now we know what look at what it became, you know.
Right.
So
this is honorable mention I'd like to mention is the movie Room. That was so emotional. That just tore my heart out. You know, when I watched it, I was just so, it's like, get a hold of yourself, Jeff. You know, it's like, it was just very, I don't know. It's just
outstanding.
Really
well acted, and I'll go ahead and go right into that. Brie Larson, the actress's name, won for Best Actress in a Film Drama for her role in Room. She plays a mother trying to give her son a normal upbringing, despite the fact they're both captives of a man who abducted her years earlier. She had been abducted a couple years, and the man impregnated her, and the kid is 5 years old, or just turning five, as the movie opens. So as the movie opens, she's been in this room for 7 years.
Right.
So an incredible.
Just the writing
incredible.
Of it was just excellent. You know, just the things that they, you know, I think they portrayed what somebody having gone through something terrible like that would think. You know, and it just really jerks at your emotions a lot. It was a very good movie.
It really was. I agree. Also, Jennifer Lawrence continued her Golden Globes hot streak by winning Best Actress in a Motion Picture and a Motion Picture Comedy for her portrayal of Miracle Mop inventor Joy Mangano in the movie Joy. That was her third Golden Globe win after American Hustle and Silver Linings Playbook. And she did an outstanding job. We've seen Joy recently as well, and that's a great movie about the QVC. People know who Joy Mangano. They may not know that name, but can't put a face to it. She's the woman that came up with the Miracle Mop and the hanger that comes down with so many hangers to make more room in your closet, the skinny velvet hangers, and many other things. She's an inventor, and she's made a fortune. And she did a great job playing her in that movie. Especially with all she juggled in her personal life. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Also, the Cecil B. DeMille Lifetime Achievement Honoree, often an emotional high point in the awards, also lacked a memorable moment, though. Honoree Denzel Washington fumbled with his speech while his wife, Pauletta, prodded him. As he wound down, Washington finally granted, quote, "Yeah, I do need my glasses." Denzel Washington was very deserving. Actually, the lead up to that, Tom Hanks presented him this award, and that's like a Lifetime Achievement Award, basically. I loved the build up to that and how they showed clips of all Denzel Washington's work. He was clearly deserving of that award, but it was almost like, and that's an award you know you're going to get in advance, Jeff. You know, they tell you you're there. He's at the front table. He's got the best seat in the house. He was not prepared at all, I didn't feel like. Did you get that?
He forgot his glasses, and so did his wife.
And then his wife was trying to remind him things, and he said, "Here, read some of these." Well, he'd written down some things, but she says, "Well, I don't have mine, too." So he laughed and said, "She don't have hers either."
Right.
I mean, it wasn't terrible. I just, the buildup, clearly he just wasn't there because his wife had to tell him at the end to thank the family. He goes, "Oh, I didn't thank the family." He goes, "Well, thank you, family," you know.
Right.
And, but no, he was. It was very worthy of that honor, for sure.
Definitely.
And
definitely.
Last thing I want to say on that is Quentin Tarantino accepted the award for Ennio Morricone's score for The Hateful Eight, a winner that presenter Jamie Foxx initially read as straight out of Compton in a parody of the Miss Universe winner debacle. with Steve Harvey, and now that was funny. Jamie Foxx, you know, we're talking about a lot of the, you know, you were talking about some of the stuff that was actually, that worked well. He pulled that off. When he said, yeah, it's on the card, you know, he tried to act like he didn't, you know, right, he was, yeah, was doing a parody of Steve Jobs. Now, as far as some of the
what about the host,
dresses?
Chad?
Say it again?
The host. Did you like the host?
Oh, Ricky Gervais,
show?
Yes. I went over that a little bit. Clearly not enough. This is the and he's been skewered so many times before, but apparently they wanted him back. This was his fourth time to host the show, and he started out sipping his beer, and he labeled the crowd, quote, a pill-popping sexual deviant scum. His first joke included a poke at Sean Penn, who conducted an interview with Mexican drug kingpin Joaquin El Chapo Guzman and penned an essay for Rolling Stone magazine. Gervais joked he wanted to get through this monologue and go into hiding somewhere where even Penn couldn't find him. He then called the actor a snitch, a reference to Mexican authorities' claims that Penn's interview helped lead them to Guzman. He joked that NBC was the perfect network to broadcast the Globe since it had no nominations, and he lauded Caitlyn Jenner for being a role model and breaking down barriers when she announced her transition, but then added, quote, she didn't do a lot for women drivers. And Jenner, formerly Bruce Jenner, was involved in a fatal car crash in February. She's being sued over the wreck, but prosecutors refused to pursue charges. So that
go ahead.
The show lived up to its reputation as a freewheeling, wisecracking affair with frequent microphone cutaways to silence profanity. In the first hour of the show, Andy Samberg joked about Bill Cosby giving a full confession, and Jonah Hill presented an award wearing a bear hat. Hill was cut off twice. North Texas actress Jamie Alexander, star of NBC's The Blind Spot, who also had a mic cut when she criticized the person running the teleprompter. If you remember, she used the F word. We could read the lips on that. But I thought what I thought was the most odd part of the night was when he presented or introduced Mel Gibson to come out. And Mel Gibson came out to basically talk about a movie or present a movie. You know how they'll do a little synopsis of each movie nominated? He came out to do that. Oh, Mad Max. It was the new Mad Max movie he came out to do because he was the original. It's the first time I'd seen Mel Gibson in a while because – his name has been Mud in Hollywood for some of his Jewish rants, and he said some terrible things and never recorded. And so, but I thought that Ricky Gervais' introduction was embarrassing. And then, so when Mel Gibson comes out to the stage, he says, every time I see him, I'm reminded that I need to get a colonoscopy. Well, Ricky Gervais didn't like this, so he comes back out and he said something that was so long, it was like two sentences full, and they bleeped it all out. So, you know, what do you think, Jeff? Go ahead. Obviously, I can tell you're itching to jump in there.
Well, I mean, he had a lot of good things that, especially at first, that really were funny. But then as the night went on, the host, it just started wearing on me a little bit, the host did.
I know exactly what you're talking about, where he kept saying, oh my God, this is going, how long does this go on?
Like,
well,
okay.
To say that one
so
time might be
about,
funny.
Yeah, it's just so negative about the show that you're the host of. And once or maybe twice, but to keep doing, he overdid it, I thought. And but he had a lot of good jokes, I felt. But he was a little bit tough. This is not a roast. It was almost like a roast, some of the, stars,
I think they hire him because they think he'll beef up ratings. He's offended many people before, and there have been many stars that won't show up because he's hosting, That whole exchange between he and Mel Gibson, apparently Hollywood has now forgiven Mel Gibson. You know, we're a nation of second and third chances a lot of times. It's the first time I'd seen him in a long time. I was actually stunned that he was there. But to make it that much more embarrassing, because he was visibly shaken after all that happened, and I just didn't like that. And I agree with you. It was too much and over the top. And you know what's funny, Jeff? I think most people in middle America probably don't know who Ricky Gervais is. to be honest with
right.
you. He's known
right.
in Hollywood. He's very well known in his home and in Great Britain. But this guy is not mainstream in America. I mean, yeah, he's just not. You know, he's done a couple of things. But as far as being a household name, a lot of people have seen him. They can, you know, they're like, okay, I know this guy from somewhere. But they don't, they can't put a name, a face to the name. And so, yeah, come off your high horse, basically, is what I'm getting to on that.
Right, right.
You know?
Exactly.
Just quickly on a couple, because we're going so far over time. Dresses, I think you'll agree with me, as far as best dress last night, hands down, Jennifer Lawrence just looked amazing. She had on a red dress. It was a red Dior dress. And with a beautiful necklace at the top, and to be honest, I don't think I've seen a dress quite like that cut that way before. The way the top was fitted with the bottom part of the full length dress,
right.
Just gorgeous. One of the misses was who I mentioned earlier, Jamie Alexander, took the plunge with a geometric gown by Jenny. The gown itself, the pattern, this was the green gown, Jeff, with the swirls that you thought. It was beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Right.
I had no problem with cleavage, obviously.
Yeah.
Cleavage is fine. It's a gorgeous thing on many dresses. This was more than cleavage. This is, I mean, when you can see more than half your boob, that's not cleavage. I'm talking top and bottom. Seriously,
exactly.
I mean, I just thought they should have came up. If the dress would have been cut, you don't need to see the bottom of your boob. I don't think, and I just don't think that's the right place for that. Maybe I'm conservative on that. I don't know. What did you think?
I thought the exact same thing. I thought, you know, a little bit more material there, and wear a necklace or something, a big necklace to help cover some of the chest. You know, there's
yeah,
just a huge
I agree.
Amount of chest.
And a lot of times they're like, oh, don't
yeah,
over-accessorize.
You wear a huge necklace, you know, like a, you know, Joan Rivers necklace,
something that's got some bling to it. Of course, sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Big misses of the night, a couple stand out. Cate Blanchett and this fringe floor sweeping, it was from Javid. It was horrible, if you remember that one, Jeff. And also Katy Perry, who's normally, you know, she's known for being a fashion icon. She was, it looked like she was trying to be like Priscilla Presley in that Prada gown, that pink Prada gown that she was stuffed into, and it just didn't work. It did not work.
I agree.
But, you know, and again, there were some people that looked. Jane Fonda, some people thought she looked great. Other people thought it was hideous, her dress with all the ruffles. I thought, you know, what is Jane Fonda, 70 plus? I thought it was okay. Not her best, but all right.
But I forget who it was. Somebody looked like they were wearing a curtain. I forget who that was.
I'm trying to remember, too, who that was. There were so many that last night, and we were. I think, was it Cate Blanchett? Is that who you're thinking of?
Maybe so. I just remember.
Or Kate Winslet.
I think maybe it was.
Kate Winslet did not look great either. So, as soon as you said that, it was the first thing I thought of, too. I was like, right. It's like the old Carol Burnett sketch where she's doing Gone with the Wind,
right.
Where she wears the curtain. All right. But that was the 73rd Golden Globes. That was. You know, again, the highlight of the night for me was Sylvester Stallone and the standing ovation
he
got.
I agree with you.
And then playing the Rocky theme. That song always gives me chills anyway, but wow. Okay, let's see here. Let's get to a few actual news things. I mean, those are news, but, you know, they were lighter and it's what's going on. In Fort Worth, Texas, the mother of a Texas teen known for his affluenza defense after he was given probation for killing four people in a 2013 drunken driving crash had her bond reduced from $1 million to $75,000 earlier today. And I'm just going to really kind of cut through these, Jeff, so we can get through a few of these. State District Judge Wayne Salvant said he understood the prosecutor's concerns that Couch might flee again, but that the charge against her, while a third-degree felony, was not serious enough to merit a $1 million bond. Her attorneys wanted it to be $15,000, however. one of our attorneys said afterward that she was not sure if Tanya Couch would immediately post bond. If she makes bail, she'll be required to wear an electronic ankle monitor and remain at home except for appointments with her doctor and her lawyer. Her eldest son from a previous marriage testified today, and that was all live on all the cable networks, and that's who she'll stay with. And trust me, she's going to make bond if she hasn't done so already while we're on the air here. I think that, you know, because you know the rules, how that is, 10%, so 7,500.
Right.
Yeah, of course she's going to make that. Oil prices fell to levels the lowest level since 2003. The price of crude oil today plummeted another 5% to $31.41 a barrel based on WTI crude oil.
Uh-huh.
That's the commodity's lowest closing price since hitting $30.73 a barrel on December 5th, 2003. And oil prices are down 16% just this year, and that's coming off a brutal 2015 when oil prices dropped 30%. Oil prices have been falling in a historical collapse. Oil prices are now down a staggering 79% from the 20-year high of $145.29 notched on July 3rd, 2008, according to Bloomberg data. And, you know, Jeff, this is a tough one for me because, obviously, the oil industry has been good to my family and many people that I know and where I grew up. But at the same time, I understand how lower gas prices help so many people in their, you know, financially.
Exactly.
Families struggling to, older people on a fixed income. There's a big difference between paying, you know, $1.73 at the pump as opposed to $4 at the pump, you know, a gallon.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
I see. The national average gas price right now is $1.95 a gallon. Many parts of the country are able to fill up for $1.75 to $1.80. And if they hunt around however, prices could fall further to maybe as low as $1.72 for a national average. What was the last, what was the price the last time you filled up, Jeff? A gallon?
I want to say it was like $1.76.
Okay. So yeah, that's pretty good when the national average is $1.95. Did you ever think you'd see a dollar something again back when gas prices were over $4 a gallon? I really didn't.
Praying good, but that's
right. It helps so many families gas prices to be lower. It's just anytime something goes low like that, somebody else is taking a hit, and in this case, it's oil field workers and their families and.
Right.
So I feel for that. You know what I mean?
I do too.
That's tough. President Obama will deliver the State of the Union address tomorrow night. It'll be his seventh and final time. It is scheduled to go on at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, given the time involved with the ceremonial entrance and introduction by the House Speaker. The speech itself may not start right on time. Of course it won't. It never does. After all, you know how that goes, Jeff. They call him out,
come
in, he shakes hands, you know. The broadcast networks and cable news all will, of course, provide live TV coverage. And it's also going to be streaming on the president's message. The White House will be streaming it live on YouTube and on its website. And actually, this is going to be a more unique speech because most years presidents use State of the Union speeches to offer a laundry list of policy proposals, which often lead to partisan scenes in the House chamber where half of the members – those from the president's party stand and applaud, and the other members of our opposition party sits silently. So maybe, I guess, we're to expect less from that of that tomorrow night?
I guess so.
Hillary Clinton, facing a tight battle with Bernie Sanders in Iowa and New Hampshire, has secured some key endorsements from activists involved in what could be a major Democratic primary issue, and that's gun control. Former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords, critically wounded in a 2011 shooting, endorsed Clinton, as did Giffords' husband Mark Kelly, saying in a joint statement that Clinton, quote, has the determination and toughness to stand up to the corporate gun lobby and the record to prove it. Clinton also has the support of Sabrina Fulton, mother of the late Trayvon Martin, the teenager shot to death in 2012 in a case that inspired criticism of Florida's Stand Your Ground law. Folsom told CNN that Hillary Clinton would stand up to the inaction of Republicans on gun control and the indifference of the National Rifle Association. So two big endorsements there for Hillary Clinton.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Some new polls out today show Bernie Sanders actually leading her in New Hampshire, where that's gone back and forth, if you recall. That's right, a neighboring state to his home state of Vermont. And Hillary leading him by 3% in Iowa. Also, a new poll out today shows Donald Trump retaking Iowa by 2%. He has a 2% lead, I believe, 31 to 29% over Ted Cruz, and a much more significant lead in New Hampshire. And Donald Trump is still hammering Ted Cruz on whether or not he's would be eligible to run for president, because he says if he gets the nominee, the DNC will file a lawsuit immediately challenging whether or not he is an American citizen and whether he can be, or
right.
whether he can, you know. So that's and that's his bro. So
right.
That's what happened when the polls get tight. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And finally, you can live with Playboy patriarch Hugh Hefner for $200 million. The Playboy Mansion, situated on 5 acres in Los Angeles' Holmby Hills, hit the market today for $200 million. With a catch, though. Hefner, the founder of Playboy Enterprises, who has lived in the home for 4 decades, does not want to move out. His continued residence there, even after the property sells, is a condition of the sale, says company spokesman John Vlauten. Quote, if a buyer is found for the Playboy Mansion, Mr. Hefner will continue to live at the mansion for the rest of his life.
So, like, why are you selling it then?
Well,
to,
things have gotten a lot quieter there. It's not what it used to be, for starters. You know, it was notorious, but now it's pretty tame now. And also the recent headlines of at least two definitely two of the nearly 60 accusers of Bill Cosby have claimed he drugged or sexually assaulted them at the Playboy Mansion. And Bill Cosby was there, was a frequent guest there, dating as far back as 1965 up and as recently as 2008. So, you know, and plus Hugh Hefner is getting on up there as well. So, but anyway, $200 million if you want the Playboy Mansion. That's going to do it for the news. The wide world of sports is straight ahead. You're listening to The Chad Report.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom. Commencing countdown, engines on. 3, 2, check ignition, 1. And may God's love be with you. Now it's time to leave the capsule.
the late, great David Bowie and the very first hit of his career, Space Oddity. And again, this song is it's incredible. What it is. Space Oddity was also David Bowie's first number one hit in the United Kingdom. It spawned a sequel hit by German artist Peter Schilling called Major Tom Coming Home. Do you remember that song, Jeff, from the early 80s? Earth Below Us. That was a sequel to that song.
I'd have to hear it.
If I played it for you, you would. Also, in 2013, Canadian astronaut Chris Hadfield performed the song on the International Space Station, therefore becoming the first music video ever shot in space with Space Oddity. And again, about the odd thing about that song, he recorded that song in 1969, and it just didn't. This goes back to being ahead of your time. It went nowhere. It charted at number 124. How's that? And then in 1973, they re-released it, and that was be his first top 40 hit. On the charts for 10 weeks in the United States. And that would be the beginning of the David Bowie era as far as chart history goes. And what do you think about that song? I just think, and again, I've always thought it's bizarre. Again, it kind of touches a nerve with me about the ground control to Major Tom, the way he says that, you know, in the beginning.
Right.
Does it do the same thing to you?
Yeah, I like it. I mean, it's
that's to know.
I don't love it, but I like it.
Wow, I love it. I think it's outstanding.
You love it? Yeah,
I like it.
I think it's part of pop culture, you know, and I think it's definitely it deserves its place.
Ground control to Major Tom. Well, yeah, I love it. I do, Jeff. Okay. All right, moving on. I'm running so far behind on time, so I'm just trying to figure out what I can scratch and what I can't hear. Obviously, the national championship game is tonight, about to get underway. Of course, and I'm talking about the college football championship. Number one, Clemson, 14-0, taking on number two, Alabama, 13-1, and that's being broadcast on ESPN. And I believe from the last show that you said that you thought that Clemson would be the one to beat.
Yeah, I don't know who won.
No, it's just it hasn't
started. They didn't play
it. It's just now starting.
Oh,
right.
Just now starting. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's all right. No, that's what I'm saying. There's so much going on today. in a passing game, Alabama quarterback Jacob Coker saved the best performance of his career, the Cotton Bowl win against Michigan State. If he can match that performance against Clemson, the Crimson Tide will be very difficult for the Tigers' defense to handle. Clemson's own quarterback, Deshaun Watson, is one of the nation's best players and a key behind his team's offensive success. No edge in this game is more distinct than Clemson's at quarterback. And I definitely that's key. And I think ESPN will get huge ratings for this tonight. Definitely.
Yeah. And I think you went with Clemson too, didn't you, on that game?
Yes, absolutely. And I say absolutely. Alabama, are you kidding? They rule. They are such a powerhouse in football. So
right.
Would I be surprised if Alabama wins? Not at all.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised, but I just have a feeling Clemson's going to do it this time.
That's me, and that's just a hunch, but based on, they're number one, and, you know, and to be ranked number one in this, that's very tough to do. But, again, and they're undefeated as well. In the NFL playoffs, wow, what a wild weekend for the NFL playoffs. On Saturday, we saw Kansas City blank the Houston Texans 30-0 in that game. That was like a bad dream, wasn't it, Jeff? It was
hello.
And later on that night, in a tight one, the Pittsburgh Steelers held on to beat the Cincinnati Bengals 18-16. And again, that one was a good game. Shocking for Cincinnati again. Cincinnati has not won a playoff game since 1990. So
yeah.
And Kansas City hadn't won a playoff game since 1993. Go ahead.
Didn't Cincinnati have like a lot of penalties that really put Pittsburgh in the field goal range to win?
That and a lot of dirty players as well. Well, I say a lot. Vontaze Burfict is who I'm talking about. This guy is a thug, and I don't even think he should be allowed to. This is the guy that knocked out Roethlisberger the last time. And the Pittsburgh Steelers are headed to Denver, but they're worried about their quarterback playing because he injured his right shoulder in the third quarter of Saturday night's win, over Cincinnati. And they visit Denver next Sunday evening. And if he can't play, Landry Jones would step in to play for him. But this is also wide receiver Antonio Brown is recovering from a concussion. So, we'll see. And wow. But what I was going to say about Kansas City, that was their first win since 1993, and the last time they won a game was also in Houston, but that was against the Houston Oilers, not the Houston Texans.
Right.
So Houston is a great place for Kansas City to play, clearly.
Yeah, obviously.
The Chiefs are a great team, though. I really think that they're excellent. Yesterday, the two-time defending NFC champion Seahawks were bailed out when Blair Walsh of the Minnesota Vikings shanked a 27-yard field goal attempt in the final minute. And talk about heartbreak. The Minnesota Vikings, no heartbreak, probably like no other as well. It's just how many times have we seen the Vikings go down like this? Over the history of,
I can't imagine how the field goal kicker feels.
Terrible. Absolutely horrible.
Yeah,
that it was on
terrible.
Him. The football wasn't really lined up the best. I'll say this for him, but he kicked a field goal earlier with it lined up the same way. The snapper didn't do the best job. But, when you're making that kind of money and the game's, it's on you. I mean,
Right.
And was it held up well enough to kick the field goal? Yes, it was. So the mistake was his. Also, the Green Bay Packers rallied from an early 11-0 deficit to compete a sweep by visiting teams in the four wild card games. They beat the Washington Redskins 35-18. And that was the first time in NFL history in a wild card weekend that no home team won, Jeff. All the road teams won. So that sets up coming up next weekend. Some good matchups, really. I think the teams that were eliminated, that's probably who should. Cincinnati is a surprise. I have to say probably out of all those the most, I would think. Even though Minnesota was a third seed, Seattle was a sixth, Seattle went in with momentum, and I'm not surprised at all that they actually, even though it was because of a missed field goal, they did what they had to do. So here's where we're at. On Saturday at 3:35 p.m. Central Time on CBS, the Kansas City Chiefs travel to New England to take on the Patriots. And Kansas City is 12-5, New England is 12-4. Saturday evening, 7:15 p.m. Central Time on NBC, the Green Bay Packers travel to Arizona to take on the Cardinals. Green Bay is 11-6, and Arizona is 13-3. On Sunday, the six-seeded Seattle Seahawks travel to Carolina to take on the number one-seeded Panthers. Seattle's 11-6, Carolina's 15-1, and that's on Fox. And then later in the afternoon on Sunday on CBS, the six-seeded Pittsburgh Steelers travel to Denver to take on the 12-4 Broncos, and Pittsburgh's 11-6. So some of those are good. I don't know if Pittsburgh can get past Denver. Kansas City and New England, so many people have New England going to the Super Bowl, but the way Kansas City played against Houston, this is a hot team right now. And they had one hell of a winning streak during the regular season, if you remember, as too. So I don't know what to think there.
They're also, very injured, too, in New England, aren't they? They have a lot of
They've had injury problems. Some have come back, like Gronkowski, but yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Also, number six, Seattle, at number one, Carolina. Even though Carolina is both you and I's pick to win it all, that if they're going to be upset, this is probably the team to do it, I would think. I don't, you know, playing Seattle's scary. I don't care where you're seated. And like I said, no home team won last week, so what's to say that, you know, who knows? And also Green Bay and Arizona, Green Bay's a good team, but I think this is the end of the road for them this coming up weekend. I think Arizona's just too tough to beat at playing at home as well. But
it's going to be an interesting weekend.
Very interesting, and I think we'll see some tighter games, unlike that Kansas City-Houston debacle.
Right, exactly.
Billy King's bold moves often seem made with little regard for the future. Now Brooklyn's future isn't King's concern. The Nets reassigned their general manager and fired coach Lionel Hollins on Sunday in the midst of their worst season since moving from New Jersey. The Nets said assistant Tony Brown will serve as the interim head coach, and the GM position will remain open until a replacement is hired. So big news there for the Brooklyn Nets. And just running down quickly in the NBA, in the Western Conference and the Southwest Division, San Antonio Spurs at 32-6. They have a 10-game lead over the Dallas Mavericks. In the Northwest Division, it's the Oklahoma City Thunder at 26-12. They have an 8.5-game lead over Utah. In the Pacific Division, it's the Golden State Warriors at 35-2. They have a 10.5-game lead over the L.A. Clippers. In the Eastern Conference, Atlantic Division, the Toronto Raptors at 24-15 have a 4-game lead over the Boston Celtics. In the Southeast Division, it's the Atlanta Hawks at 23-15. They have a 0.5-game lead over the Miami Heat. In the Central Division, the Cleveland Cavaliers at 26-9 have a 4-game lead over the Chicago Bulls. So, and Cleveland comes into Dallas tomorrow night to play. So, as far as nationally televised, there's 3 games tonight in the NBA. None are nationally televised due to, because I don't want to go up against the Alabama-Clemson matchup that's currently on ESPN. So that's going to do it for sports. The entertainment update is next, right here on The Chad Report. David Bowie and the eighth top 40 hit of his career, Modern Love. And that was on the charts for 9 weeks. And that was actually, 1983 was actually the biggest year of his career chart-wise. The first single off that, Let's Dance, out was Let's Dance, number one hit. Then China Girl followed that. Then Modern Love was the third single from that album, in, all in 1983. And I
yeah,
love
I think
that song.
Probably Modern Love and Modern Love and China Girl, two of my favorites of his.
The Modern Love, though, it's, well, first of all, I love the way the, what he says, the 40, but he's like, I know when to go out, I know when to stay in.
Right.
Like, and hey, words to live by. But yes, I just love that bump, the beat to that. Boy, I'm just ready to go after I hear that.
Oh,
and that's
yeah.
That's one of those uplifting songs, definitely. We'll actually close the show with Let's Dance, so for people that, because that's another one of his. Again, it goes back to generations, Jeff, because, you know, I think a lot of people would be surprised, especially the baby boomers, to think that 1983 was David Bowie's biggest year, when
right.
our generation thinks, of course it was. But, you know, those songs I just mentioned, that's the first thing we think of, are those songs.
Right.
Whereas the baby boomers think of Space Oddity, Changes, Fame, all those golden years.
Right.
First come to mind first.
Sure.
So, and again, we talk about this so much. The baby boomers and Generation X kind of go hand in hand because a lot of the careers they started, we prolonged. You know, David Bowie's just a prime example of that, along with so many other artists, you know. And made them legends. You know, we kind of worked together, I guess, in a matter of speaking, if you think about that. Because think about when we were growing up, a lot of the stars were, they were not 20 years old like now, or 20, you know, they were older. Because we took the
right.
stars of the baby that were baby boomers and extended their careers. And a lot of, in a lot of instances, they had bigger careers under our era in the 80s than they did in the 70s, or some even in the 60s, you know.
Exactly.
Some of their biggest hits. So, and that's the case for David Bowie. Okay. You know, there's so many things if this somebody's listening to our show for the first time tonight, usually we're a little more together than this. I've got papers just flying. I've got notes written everywhere. And I just can't believe the time, Jeff. You talk a lot.
Please, I can't get a word in edgewise.
Whatever. You and that want to talk more about Ricky Gervais of the Golden Globes. That threw the whole show off. But
what about the host? What about the host? What about him?
No. No, I try to get the show prepared a little in advance, but then David Bowie passing away so suddenly, that along with the Golden Globe, that just kind of made everything just crazy. You know, I just
right.
It's like speaking of passing away, R&B legends from Lionel Richie to Stevie Wonder turned out to say goodbye to Natalie Cole today. The singer's funeral services were held this afternoon at West Angeles Church of God in Christ. West Angeles Church of God in Christ in Glendale, California. And according to the LA Times, Chaka Khan performed. Inside the 5,000-seat church, a large photo of Cole accompanied her casket, which was closed and adorned with multiple large bouquets of white roses. The Associated Press reports the service lasted almost 3 hours and was filled with several hundred mourners. Whew, 3 hours is a long time for a funeral.
Oh, yeah.
Quote, I feel so blessed to have called you my friend and my buddy and many times my confidant, said Smokey Robinson inside the church. You are so real and so down to earth. Now I have to say you're so real and up to heaven. Others who attended the funeral included the Reverend Jesse Jackson, Johnny Mathis, Robbie Yancey, producer David Foster, and actress Courtney B. Vance and Angela Bassett. And photos Wonder and Yancey can also be seen performing inside the church. And, of course, Natalie Cole was the daughter of singer Nat King Cole. She died on New Year's Eve at the age of 65 of pulmonary arterial hypertension, which led to heart failure. And she'll be buried next to her parents, sister and brother, at Forest Lawn Memorial Park in Glendale. So, again, a sad ending for Natalie Cole.
Oh, yeah.
That's age 65. It's just pulmonary arterial hypertension. That is, which leads to heart failure. I mean, you're in the medical field, Jeff. Just just briefly what happens there? Pulmonary arterial hypertension.
You know, I don't understand it, to be honest with you, all the way, because I'm in dentistry and I have patients with that, and we have to really watch their blood pressure and medicines that we give them and things like that. But as far as with the dynamics of the condition,
well, I didn't mean to put you on the spot there.
Yeah, yeah.
You're getting me back for the whole. You're getting me back for the host of the Golden Globe thing.
Right,
no, I got you. But that happens, is what you're saying, in the dental field. You have to watch out for those kind of things.
Yeah, you have to watch. You have to watch for patients that have that condition, and because it can be very deadly if you give them the wrong medicines, or if you're not watching their other factors and their medical history and stuff, and what they're taking medicinally and things like that.
Gotcha. Well, that's very sad. Two big stars there. Natalie Cole, of course, you know, remembered for many hits, but she'll most be remembered for her duet with her late father in the early 90s. She won many Grammys for Unforgettable, if you remember. She sang along with the tracks that her father had originally done. Great, great song. All right, Star Wars, The Force Awakens, stayed on top of the North American box office for the fourth straight weekend, beating out Leonardo DiCaprio in The Revenant and becoming the third largest grossing movie in the world ever. According to Studio Estimates Sunday, The Adventures of Rey, Finn, and the Star Wars from the previous Star Wars films raked in another $41.6 million in the United States and Canada and $104.3 million overseas, led by a record-breaking opening in China. Disney Distribution Executive Vice President Dave Hollis said the expected $53 million debut weekend in China was spectacular, given the film is the first Star Wars episode many Chinese people have ever seen. Quote, "We're very encouraged," he said. Well, that's putting it mildly, I would think. And now, Jeff, in the United States and Canada, it is the biggest movie of all time, and the first to pass $800 million, with $812 million so far. Its global total now stands at $1.73 billion, passing Jurassic World's $1.67 billion. The film now has in its sights number two Titanic, with its $2.2 billion box office haul in 1997-98, and number one Avatar, which racked up $2.8 billion in 2009 and 2010.
Wow.
The Revenant, a gritty R-rated movie that we talked about earlier that won for Best Dramatic Movie last night. It's about an 1820s frontiersman who gets mauled by a bear, blasted through expectations of about $25 million, is what they were expecting, in its first weekend of wide release, and hauled in $38 million instead. So,
yeah,
wow, incredible there. Just running down the top 10, at number 10, Concussion. At number 9, Joy. 8, Alvin and the Chipmunks, The Road Chip. At number 7, The Big Short. At 6, The Hateful Eight. Number 5 is Sisters. At number 4, The Forest. 3, Daddy's Home. At number 2, The Revenant. And like I said, at number 1, once again, Star Wars The Force Awakens with $41.6 million. Wow. And also, you know, I always have more things than we're going to do because we're of time issues, but you should see how many things I've cut. I've got to mention the Powerball, Jeff. It's expected to be upwards of $1.4 billion now on Wednesday night.
Awesome.
So, yes, and the lady that sold me my ticket at Quick Trip on Saturday night, no shade to Quick Trip. I love Quick Trip, and I will continue to go, but I don't want to see her again. She's like, this is a winner. No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah, I've done nothing. She was talking to the partner, Hair. Whatever.
Exactly.
Thank you, John.
The guy that sold me our tickets for this next one on Wednesday told me he just wants a car out of the deal. You know, I said, well, if I win, you got it.
Well, he didn't tell you it's a winner. He's telling you what he wants if you win. Okay.
All right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. Wow. All right. I can find my belt buried under my notes here. Celebrity birthday time. Rapper Bones is 22 today. Actress Amanda Peet. Jeff?
Ooh, I'm going to say 43.
Very close. 44 today for Amanda. Singer Mary J. Blige.
Gosh. I'm going to say 47.
Minus two, 45 for Mary J. Mary J. is, you would think she'd be a little older just because she has that. She carries, it's the way she carries herself.
Well,
I can remember when she was a totally different artist than she is now, but she has made one hell of a career. 45 for Mary J. today. Actress and comedian Kim Coles of Living Single fame, 54. Singer Robert Earl Keane is 60. World Golf Hall of Famer Ben Crenshaw. Jeff?
Say 63.
Plus one, 64. And last but not least, well, maybe least, I don't know. No, finally, country singer Naomi Judd.
Say 68.
Plus two, 70 for Naomi Judd.
Wow.
And, you know, of course, I don't want anyone to die with it, which I don't want anyone. But do you remember when and I brought this up before, Naomi Judd, and over 20 years ago, when the Judds were ending because she was terminally ill. Do you remember this? It was called a Love Can Build a Bridge tour. She was in her 40s still. She's 70 now. What happened? Talk about
that
a remission. Hey.
Love
can build money in our pockets, tour is what it should have been called. But anyway, I also have to give a shout-out today, Jeff. Today would have been my grandmother, Bonnie Olson. She would have been 96 today if she were still with us. And same age as my other grandmother, Ruth Stowell. They were the same age. They were only about 2 months apart. And very, very missed. And so happy birthday in heaven there. And then once again, you know, my thoughts and prayers are with Iman, David Bowie's wife and supermodel, Iman. They've been together since 1992. And, of course, his son, Duncan, and their entire family and his friends and all the millions of fans around the world. My thoughts and prayers are with you, and as Jeff's are as well. You can find Jeff and I on Facebook at Chad Burleson or Jeff Rivers. You can find us on Twitter at Chad Report USA. The Chad Report is distributed by Blog Talk Radio and is a CJ Scorpio Entertainment production. Thanks, everyone.